Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is Troubleshooting File Transfers Using WebSphere MQ File Transfer Edition. Today's presenter is Paul O'Donnell. Paul is a senior software engineer with the MQ Level 2 support team. Paul has been working with MQ for over 10 years and with the MQ Level 2 team for about 4 years. At this point in time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Paul.
Thank you, Joseph. Today I want to go over some of the basics of troubleshooting MQ File Transfer Edition. I just want to let you know up front that I'm planning a follow-up presentation to cover whatever items I didn't have time to include in this one. Slide 2, please. Let me review the agenda quickly. The first thing I want to cover is the path that a file takes through the MQ network. And then I want to cover the problems, some problems and solutions with agents and file transfers. I also borrowed some slides of gotchas from our a Level 3 presentation that you may find very useful. And then I'm going to end with a health check recommendations. Slide 3, please. Okay, let's go over the path that messages travel through when transferring a file from one agent to another. If you look at the diagram, you'll see that there's some numbers that are circled. These are the steps that I want to cover in order. Step 1 down at the bottom left, you'll see, is the command line or GUI sends an MQ message to the source agent. And this message is routed via the MQ network to a queue, which the source agent is monitoring. And the message contains instructions about the file transfer to perform. Step 2, up near the top on the left, based on the instructions in that message, the agent performs some checking. For example, is the user allowed to make this transfer? And then starts transferring a file to the destination agent. And this is after a handshake takes place with the destination agent. The file data is transmitted by packaging it as MQ messages and then routing it through the MQ network to the destination agent, which then will take those messages and reassemble them in the correct order into a file. There will be acknowledgement sent from the destination queue manager as needed. Step 3, we're looking towards the from top left going down towards the middle. While the transfer in step 2 is taking place, the agent is also generating monitoring and audit information. Some of the monitoring information might be, you know, something like I'm 10% through the transfer, 20% through. Possible audit information would be, you know, announcing a transfer of a file was completed for a particular user. This audit information is sent using MQ messages to a queue manager, which has been designated as performing the coordination queue manager role. Step 4, at the coordination queue manager, both the monitoring and audit information is published using MQ PubSub to interested parties. And finally, in step 5, when the agent has completed transferring the file, it can optionally send a notification back to the process which requested the file transfer operation. Slide 4, please. Okay, this slide just has notes on those 5 steps for you to review at your leisure. Slide 5, please. Okay, the first problem I want to cover is when an agent won't start. There can be several possible causes, and rather than try and cover each one, I want to show you the fastest way to find the problem. The best place to look first would be the agent logs. And if there is a standard error file there, that will have important information. When the agent starts up, during that process, it does create a standard error file, but that file then goes away when the agent actually starts. So if it's still there, it will have information about the problem. The next file to look for is the output0.log file. That's normally going to have everything that you want. If there are any FFDC files, they may have some useful information as well. Now, during the startup process, FDE does a couple of things. It puts the process ID for the agent into the agent.lck file. It's the agent lock file. It also reads about three properties files. Now, in order to do these two things, there has to be sufficient space on disk, and there has to be reading permissions for the user running the application. For the user that is running the Java program that is trying to start the agent needs to be able to read the properties files. So if they're locked down to root or something, they won't be able to read those. Now, I've put a couple of commands on the slide. These are Unix commands, df-k. Then the next argument would be the directory where your agent information, your agent directory is located. And that will show you how much space you have. And the other one is a recursive long list of the files. That way you can see what the permissions are. On Windows, you would use the MQ Explorer to, the Windows Explorer to find that information as well. With the plugin in the MQ Explorer, you can check to see the status of the agent as well. Slide 6, please. Okay. Now, you can also check the agent queue manager using the MQ Explorer, run MQSC, or the DSPMQ command. Each of these will make it clear to you whether or not the queue manager is up and running. Now, if there's a lack of system resources, that's another possible cause. Due to the variety of systems, you'll probably need to check with your system administrator to determine the best way to figure out if you're running out of space, if there's a problem with CPU availability or with memory. Slide 7, please. The next problem to discuss is a hung agent. Now, these are Java programs, and there are several things that could cause a hang to happen. One of the most likely is that the default heap size is not big enough. So you'll need to check that at first. Then check the agent log files again, the same ones, output 0.log and any others that are in those directories. Slide 8, please. Some of the diagnostics that you can run include gathering Java core file. This is actually the very best diagnostic that there is. On Unix, the easy way to do this is simply to issue a kill -3 command against the Java process ID. Then what you'll want to do is wait several minutes, run the command again. It'll create a second Java core file. Wait a few more minutes and run the command again to get a third one. Now, when you get a Java core file, what you're getting is everything that's currently running in the JVM. And by getting a Java core file and then another one a few minutes later, you can see what is still running after those few minutes. And doing it a third time, again, will make it easy to determine which processes are hung and which ones are not. Okay. Now, the gap between running these commands should be anywhere from 2 to 10 minutes, depending on your environment. Okay. Slide 9, please. On Windows, Java cores are a little harder to create. One of the methods that you can use is to simply stop the agent. Of course, then you lose anything that was in the hung process you wanted to evaluate. And then start it again from a command prompt window, but use the -F argument. And that will cause the agent to run in the foreground. And then if it hangs again, you simply issue a controlled break key sequence at that window, and it'll create a Java core file in whatever directory you were in when you started the agent. Now, there's a better way, and again, you'd want to do the same thing over again, wait a few minutes to issue and get another Java core file to compare them. That doesn't work very well, though. So there is a better way to do this. Let's go to slide 10. The method I'm going to show you here to use for Windows also works for Unix. So you could use the same thing for both environments. And that is to edit the agent.properties file for your agent and put in a line for a property called Java Core Trigger File. And then you put in what file you want to use for this. And so if you were on Unix, you could simply issue the touch command. And when that happens, it would create the Java Core file within 30 seconds in the agent directory where you have the output0.log file. And on Windows, it works the same way. You simply just create the file, and within 30 seconds, it will create the Java Core file for you. Can we have slide 11, please? Well, one more thing on slide 10, and that is that you can also just simply modify the file if it already exists. Okay, on slide 11, talk a little bit about transfer failures right now. Remember back to the message paths that I discussed at the beginning of the presentation. If any part of that path is unavailable for any reason, a transfer may fail. If a user ID does not have sufficient permissions to access a queue or a queue manager, the transfer can fail. If there is an underlying disk problem, or a system is running out of memory, or the CPU is bogged down another request, a queue manager might be unavailable, which of course could lead to a transfer failing. Checking the transfer status in MQ Explorer is a good place to start. Another thing to do is to check the status of your channels, your MQ channels. They should all be in either running or QS state. If you have a transmission queue that's not triggered, it's possible that will stop a transfer from taking place. The other things that you should check are, is the remote agent running? Do you have sandboxes enabled? Does the receiving file system have the right permissions and enough space for the incoming files? And then the last thing to check would be the log files for both the sending and receiving agents. Slide 12, please. Some of the diagnostics. One of the best things you can do is to have a set of remote queues enabled to forward a message around your network so that it can start every channel. If it hits a point where the channel doesn't start, then you might be able to find your source of your problem rather quickly. Another thing you can do is to find out if you're getting to the sending agent at all, is to simply stop the agent, resubmit the request, and then before you start the agent is to check the system.fte.command.youragentname queue and see if the command made it into the queue. Finally, there is another command called FTE show agent detail. If you issue that command with the -v option, you'll get a lot of useful information about the agent, including the status of a file transfer. Slide 13, please. As a last resort, you can enable trace on the agent. Now, you can either stop the agent and start it with a trace argument, or you can do it dynamically with the FTE set agent trace level command. You can set it to all, or you can set it to something less than that, depending on what you're doing. Resubmit the transfer. After the failure occurs, you can issue the command again, the set agent trace level command, that is, and turn the tracing off. As far as analyzing traces is concerned, less is better for the MQ support staff. So keeping the trace short is very valuable to us. Okay, slide 14, please. Now I want to get to the common gotchas. These are ones that I extracted from an internal level 3 presentation. I thought they might be useful to you, and we'll just go over them now. The first one is with username problems. Now, they can cause a lot of connectivity issues. such as the agent can't send the message to another agent, and messages never get published by the coordination queue manager. There's three likely causes. The user ID is not defined on one of the systems running a queue manager. It's not correctly authorized to one of the systems running a queue manager. Or it's longer than 12 characters. So, for example, on Windows, the word administrator is 13 characters and just won't work. Also, sometimes people use LDAP to provide usernames, and they get them from email addresses, which frequently are over 12 characters. Solution, of course, is to ensure that the user IDs used are defined on each system, hosting a queue manager that FTE messaging traffic could pass through, that they're correctly authorized. Common mistake is not to authorize them on the transmission queues, and make sure that the character names are 12 characters or less. Part of this also, at least on Unix, you can run into an issue with is with group memberships. Make sure that the user IDs are in all the appropriate groups. Okay, slide 15, please. Gotcha number two. This is creating a monitor with wildcards. Monitoring for star and transferring star. Basically, what happens here is that the agent spends a lot more time working on transfers than is necessary because of these wildcards. So the agent's been configured to trigger when any file is found in a directory. And when it triggers, it has been configured to move every file in the directory. So if there's one file, there will only be one file move. But if there's two, there will be four moves. And if there's 10 files, there will be 100 file moves. So the agent is working much harder than it needs to be. Solution, and there's two of them, the one that's here in the slides is that specifying the dollar file path is the name of the file to move. Now there's a link there, you can go and read more about it. And just as the presentation was being published, I got another update on this. And there's another option is to use the -BS parameter for FTE create monitor. That's B as in boy, S as in Sam. So -BS, and then a number. And what this number does is says how many batches or how many files to move in a batch. So if it were 50 and you had 1,000 files in the monitored folder, the monitor is created with -BS50, it would cause the monitor to transfer 50 files at a time over 20 batches. Okay, slide 16, please. We are on slide 16. This is common gotchas number 3, character set conversion. Some of the problems that it can, some of the symptoms are that there's error messages, such as BFG IO0058E and 59E, when transferring between heterogeneous systems. Some of the little-known facts that can contribute to this problem is that all code page conversion for a transfer is done at the destination agent. Different platforms, JVM, ship different code page support. So the combination of those two problems can result in the source agent running in code page, say, CP123, but the destination agent doesn't know anything about this particular code page. The solution requires some planning. And that's by a careful selection of the code pages that you're going to use, and you can also adjust these within your applications. Slide 17, please. Okay, gotcha number 4. My agent is not listed by the FTE list agents or MQ Explorer. And there could be several reasons for this. And what's recommended is that you follow the link on the slide and go to and review the chart, the troubleshooting chart within the information center on this. And that should help. Okay. Slide 18, please. Gotcha number five. The MQ Explorer plugin doesn't get updated. The solution here is simply to issue the command, the strmqcfg-i command. This causes the MQ Explorer to get refreshed. Now, this is necessary because of the underlying technology, which is Eclipse, and it requires a refresh whenever there's an update like that. Okay, slide 19, please. Common gotcha is number six, not checking the system requirements. Symptoms, FDE not installing, not receiving service for FDE configuration, or the database logger is not working. Cause, FDE is being used in an unsupported, untested, and possibly known not to work configuration. And the way to resolve this is simply review the system requirements before doing an installation. And slide 20, please. Now I'd like to talk about what we can do to check the health of your MQ FTE network. This slide shows the basic parts, and I'm going to want to go over these and mention things that you can do for each one of them that will help in preventing problems from occurring. Keep in mind the philosophy that prevention is better than a PMR. One of the things, though, that I need to point out before we continue on is that this is basically a reminder. The FDE programs are Java programs, and they all run inside a JVM. And it is the JVM that is actually interacting with everything else. So slide 21, please. Okay. First thing, user IDs. We've covered this, but we'll review it again. They need to be less than 12 characters. They need to exist on all required systems. And they need to be members of all necessary groups. Now, on Unix, it's possible to create a user ID, and its primary group is included in the password file, but doesn't show up in a group file. It may show up as members of other groups, but it may not indicate what their primary group is. Something to keep in mind. File systems. Do they have sufficient space for the configuration, for log and trace files, for queue managers, current and future message traffic, and destination files? When planning your file systems, plan them to be double whatever it is you figure you actually need, because you're going to have growth, and there's always things that are overlooked, and it's just a wise practice. Okay. Slide 22, please. A little more on file systems. You also need to make sure that the appropriate permissions for the FTE user IDs have been assigned on all the files and directories that they need to access. Now, memory. There needs to be sufficient shared memory for MQ structures. Or sufficient shared memory structures for MQ. Right now, in the Quick Beginnings manuals, we publish kernel settings for most systems. Kernel settings go back to the days when memory that was available on systems was much, much, much less than it is today. And the settings that we have in the Quick Beginnings manuals, these are basic, very basic. And they're enough for one lightly loaded queue manager. They don't make allowances for other queue managers, for heavy loads, for database or other applications that require memory structures too. The MQ config script, when I put the link in the slide for it, will check your kernel settings and tell you whether you meet the basic requirements or not. Now, for AIX, there are no settings. The operating system just naturally sets those very high, so you can't adjust them. Okay, also, for Unix platforms, you can set the ulimit command to approximately 1 gigabyte, and this will allow for 25 concurrent transfers. For all platforms, you can set the FTE JVM properties to the value there. And that's also for a gigabyte. Okay, let's go to slide 23. for MQ, a really good thing to do is to set up scripts or purchase a tool that will monitor your MQ network. FDE is dependent on MQ being available. You need to monitor the channel status. Every channel needs to be either running or quiesced. So if it's inactive, it'll start when a message lands on the transmission queue, assuming that that's triggered. You need to monitor queue depth. Make sure you're not coming close to a queue full situation, or to see if you have something in your dead letter queue. Monitoring the network status. MQ requires the network to be available, and it doesn't tolerate it going away unless that happens and is resolved while it's in a quiesced state. When you set up your authorizations within your queue managers, you can create queue profiles and assign authorizations that way to those FTE user IDs. You can see what the current profiles are or current permissions are by using the DSP MQ AUT command. Now, the example I have here, the two examples show using checking them on a group. One thing you need to know is that when you use the set MQ, I have an error I just noticed in this slide when I changed this to the second one. That's not an error. That's correct. Both these commands are showing the permissions for at the group level. You can also do it at the individual user level. And you would use -P instead of -G at that time. Okay, the set MQAUT command is the one that you use to actually assign the rights that a particular user or group of users has for any particular MQ object. Let's go to slide 24, please. So, some hints and tips. There's a section in the Information Center that's very extensive, and the information it provides on troubleshooting MQFTE. The link is included in the slide. It's well worth your time to become familiar with it. Should you need to open a PMR, a very useful thing to do is to just get in the habit of creating a zip file of the config directory and everything below it. Now also realize that MQFTE sits on top of MQ. It makes use of it. So if there's a problem in MQ, we'll need to see the queue manager error logs and any new FDC files that were created. If you send those, just do that automatically out of habit, it will save time. Now, a very detailed description of what the problem is and what you were doing at the time can save a great deal of time in troubleshooting. And once again, I want to emphasize that prevention is better than a PMR. And I'd like to turn the time back to Joseph at this time.
Thank you, Paul, for a great presentation. At this point in time, Jackie, we would like to open the lines for questions.
We have no questions on the phone.
At this time, we will conclude the presentation.